The opinions expressed here are those of the individual participants. Curry Coast Community Radio takes no position on issues discussed in this program.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night, wherever you are in the world. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Ocean Mist Power Hour, brought to you by Misty Young. I'm your friend, your host, right here, based out of Brookings Harbor, Oregon, and broadcasting on KCIW FM 100.7. We're so glad to have you here on this incredible episode today. We've got a great show for you. We're broadcasting, as I said, from Brookings Harbor, Oregon, the gateway of the Great Pacific Northwest. It's about as far west as you can get in the continental U.S. This is the home of daffodils in December, flowers all year round, and the nicest people you'll ever meet. And guess what? Dun, dun, dun. The smartest people, too. Where the mountains and the old-growth redwoods meet the sea, Harbor Brookings is home to me. Before we get started today, I'd like to thank the entire KCIW sound engineering and production crew. Thank you so much for helping this broadcast and podcast be what it is for all of our dedicated listeners. And to the listeners in our audience, whether you're here in Brookings Harbor, Oregon, or anywhere in the United States, or for that matter, anywhere in the world, welcome. We're glad to have you as part of the show. Today, we're going to talk about literally the single most pressing issue in human history. Honest to God, I really truly believe that in my soul, in my being. Every part of my skeleton and every cell in my body knows this to be true. You know, I'm always talking about nutrition, and I think that's pretty darn important. But this issue trumps everything, 100%. We're going to talk about climate change. And my guest today is a highly distinguished scholar. I'm going to let him introduce himself to you with all the gory details. But let me just tell you, we have a world-renowned scholar in the studio today. Please give a great welcome to Tom Sukhanik. Hi, Tom. Thanks for being here today.
Hi, Misty. Thanks for the introduction. I appreciate it. Hopefully, we can go through a few things that are important for everybody to understand about climate change, where it's coming from, where it's going, and hopefully what we can do personally, each one of us, to deal with this issue and hopefully help solve the problem.
Really appreciate hearing that. And yes, I think it is exactly that, you know, what each one of us can do personally, because I think most of us sort of have this sense, right? I mean, we're old enough to have been hearing about global warming for years and years, right? And the idea that something's happening, but it's gotten to the point of dire. I mean, there's been decades of, hey, things are happening, and everybody ignored it for so long. And as I understand it, I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm up in arms about nothing. I'd like to hear from you. Is it dire?
It is dire, absolutely. For the past few decades, like you say, we've been hearing some about it, and we've been hearing some other opinions about it. But actually, the impacts have been here, and we've been seeing them, we've been feeling them every day of our lives. In reality, they've always been there. They're just getting worse and worse and worse by the day, actually. And for the past several decades, the major network news stations have not been addressing it. They talk about all these emergency things that are happening: tornadoes, hurricanes, floods, mudslides, temperature records being broken. But they haven't said anything about why this is happening. And literally within the last, I would say, 6 to 9 months, that's all changed. I've written many letters to the editor, letters to news networks. Why aren't you addressing climate change? But I think there's enough of us that have been doing that they're finally catching on. And the reason is everybody's being affected by it so much more so. And the impacts are increasing exponentially. All of the things that we're seeing extreme temperatures, extreme snowpack fluctuations, extreme storms and winds, tornadoes, hurricanes, extreme floods, extreme droughts. We've got mudslides. We've got rapid sea level rise. We've got El Nino events increasing extinction rates from fauna and flora. And we've got extreme seasonality changes that are affecting the organisms on our Earth. And actually, we have extreme ocean productivity fluctuations as well. So all of these things are happening. You tune into any station on any day, morning or night, and you're going to see what's happening in terms of these extremes. Some of them are extremes from 1 year to the next, and those are called whiplash effects. Mm-hmm. With our snowpacks, some years there's zero snow in the Sierra Nevada, where the Department of Water Resources has been taking snow measurements by sending a core down in the same place at the same time every year. 2 years ago, there was no snow, zero,
wow.
Zero.
Wow.
First time ever.
Wow.
This next, the next years and the next 2 years were massively 163% greater than our normal average. So that's a whiplash effect.
Mm-hmm.
Same with temperatures. The Arctic winds are coming down. So the polar vortex, people think about the polar vortex when it's occurring in the middle of summer. And what's happening? What's happening is that the Earth is heating up much more so in the Arctic than any place else. And when that happens, the melting and the winds that are caused from that are disrupting the jet stream. There's a jet stream that circles the globe in the north and the North Pole, and it's like a little halo around that. And it goes around and around and around counterclockwise. And when the winds are disrupted, it disrupts the jet stream so that the jet stream tips down, and it tips down into the continental United States, and it brings us all of that cold air, which causes sometimes snow or hail or all those cold temperatures.
Mm-hmm.
Opposite is happening as well. When that's not happening, we get the extreme heat. And right now, the last 5 years, the temperature of the Earth is the hottest it's ever been as long as we've been keeping records.
Mm-hmm.
So we have all of these effects taking place, and the news networks cannot ignore it, and they've finally caught on to the fact that, yes, we are seeing personally in real time what's happening with our climate, and it is caused by climate change, which is caused by several other things that are happening.
Oh, my goodness. It's unbelievable to me that there are so many things that are happening, and I'd love to ask about a few of the terms that you just mentioned, and before we do, I really want to ask, how did you end up in Brookings? And I want to kind of go dig into your backstory a little bit. You're a distinguished professor and a distinguished scholar. I'd love for you to talk about your current position, what you're doing for work, or are you retired? I'm curious about that. I think you're still active in the workforce.
I'm still working, but I'm not getting paid for it.
Okay, I get it. So, and then I'd love to know, and I think our listeners would probably love to know too, how did a guy with your level of credentials and worldwide experience end up here in Brookings? How'd you get here?
Well, I'm a marine biologist by trade, and we lived in Sacramento since 1982, and I got my PhD at the University of Washington in Seattle, and we traveled back and forth along the coast because I'm a marine biologist. I stopped at lots of places. I worked at the Bodega Marine Laboratory out of California, and when we did, we had our two kids, and we camped along the coast for decades. And one day we were traveling down through Brookings along the coast, and our neighbor that we lived next to in Sacramento was on the sidewalk. And said, Terry, what's going on here?
Hey, buddy, what's up?
we always thought he was having a problem with his wife because he kept disappearing for weeks at a time. However, Terry Patterson was the person who was here in Brookings, and he owned the TV station and the theater. And he was working with his brother up here to run these businesses. And we stopped, and we really enjoyed Brookings every time we came through. And we eventually said, hey, let's think about this as a long-term retirement place.
Right. It's a great idea, right? You've never regretted that decision?
Never,
I'm sure.
ever.
Yeah.
So we bought some property here and eventually got a house, and we're on Ocean View Drive now.
Nice.
We love it.
Oh, it's the best place, isn't it? Just wonderful.
Absolutely.
How many years ago was that?
That was about 15 years ago.
But the reason I ask is I'm just kind of curious, from a climate change perspective, have you noticed differences here in Brookings Harbor that maybe weren't the way they are 15 years ago, or maybe they've changed? Have you noticed any changes?
Absolutely, especially
wow.
with the temperature.
Just in that
temperature is
tiny period of time?
Oh, absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah, in that period of time, we're getting increased sea level rise, which is not as detectable as other things, but temperature, when it wipes out entire plants, and Flora Pacifica is a nursery, and
yes.
they have hydrangeas there that their whole crop was virtually wiped out a few years ago when it was like 105 here.
Yes.
And it was in the 80s, 85 this last week.
Yes.
But the temperatures are increasing incrementally each year. We're getting a little higher and a little higher and a little higher.
That's just crazy. Now, a term that you used earlier, you talked about the jet stream and it's sort of creating like this little halo that runs counterclockwise around the top of the Earth. Is there such a thing on the bottom of the Earth too? I mean, usually there's sort of a complementary thing. Are there two of those?
There is. One on the top and one on the bottom, and they each go in different directions.
They do.
They do.
Weird. I never knew about that. That's really cool. Is the one on the bottom changing the same way that the one on the top is?
It is, but it's harder to detect because there's so much frozen landmass there. So it is.
It is.
But the northern pole, the North Pole, is the one that's being heated the most. And wow. It's probably because the Earth is tilted in that particular direction.
It's tilted that way. So I know this summer, and we're, of course, visiting now in the summer of 2019. So I don't know, maybe somebody's listening to this 5 years in the future because they're listening to it on a podcast or maybe in some alternative reality. Come on, I'm just kidding. But, you know, in the future, we can imagine that the temperatures are going to continue to get hotter. We can imagine that the Earth is going to continue to change. And we can look at, I think, there's discussion right now about the sixth mass extinction on the planet. Is that part of climate change? Is that what this is also all about?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There are many different animal and plant species, groups of species that are going extinct now. And their extinction rates have increased dramatically since the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, which is about 1750 to 1800, when we started burning fossil fuels for energy. And that means gasoline. We've been burning oil. We've been burning coal. We've been burning natural gas. And all of those are used. They built our country. The oil industry has built our country. But now we have to back off from those particular sources of energy because we're seeing the effects of having carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, primarily carbon dioxide. There's other greenhouse gases that are heat-trapping gases as well, but carbon dioxide is the big bugaboo. And we've known about this for 100 years. In 1876, a scientist named Svante Arrhenius wrote a paper and explained the heat-trapping nature of carbon dioxide and predicted that our Earth would be increasing in temperature as a result of that. Since then, and he wrote his model with a paper and pencil.
And you said he did this in 1876.
1876,
wow.
Yes. We've known about this forever. Not forever, but for us, it's
more
a long
100
time.
More than 100 years, yeah.
Yes, that's right. And even, I mean, what we've done with that is we've improved the models. James Hansen in 1988 testified to Congress that his work, his projections, and his research showed that with increasing CO2, our Earth will be increasing in temperature tremendously over the next 20 to 50 years. And he actually had projections that he'd built a model for. And he presented that to Congress. And actually, Herbert Walker Bush ran on the platform that he was going to be the one who solved climate change.
Dear George H.W. Bush, it didn't happen. Love, Misty. Continue, please.
Yes. So he ran on that platform. He won. 1988 was when James Hansen testified, and Bush won in 89. Unfortunately, he was dragged kicking and screaming to sign the climate protocol in 92. But ever since then, it has been politicized. And unfortunately, it is politicized even today, and it's gotten worse and worse. Of course, George Bush was an oil man. He owned his own oil company. Mm-hmm. And the oil companies have really taken hold and been providing information, and not always the correct information, that we're not having a problem. And we really are.
We really are. I'm overwhelmed at sometimes literally with grief. In fact, I spent some time, I've been a very early adopter of social media. So when, you know, Facebook came out in 2004, I think I jumped on it on 2006, started building a following and, you know, learned all about fan pages and this and that, built a strong business on it. I built a restaurant empire on it, literally, and then even built a big social media company on it. Why am I telling you all this? Because early adopter, I've always been into it, you know, really spent a lot of time learning it, teaching it to other people, showing them how to use social media to their benefit. So a couple of things have happened. We are the media now. Now we are the media.
Right.
And in the last year or so, I took a break from social media. I got the opportunity to take a nice early retirement in my life. It's been wonderful. I'm so thankful. And I took a break probably for a year and a half on any kind of social media at all. And then about a year ago, I got, well, you know, I got a little itch going on. And I said, maybe I'll just get on Instagram, and hopped on Instagram and started following all kinds of accounts of things that I thought were interesting, nutrition, plant-based living, and then, of course, climate change. And a few months ago, I found myself literally, I've always been a very happy, upbeat, eager person, an optimist in every way. And I found myself slipping into depression, which is very odd for me. I'm not a depressed person at all. And I kind of realized I was strung out on all the ugliness that I was seeing in social media. Again, we are the media. So here I am participating in it by liking and sharing and, you know, promoting and commenting and all of that stuff. But what I discovered was the severity of the climate change discussion. And thankfully, we are the media, because that's where I learned a tremendous amount about climate change. And I found it interesting to find that the young people are really the people that are stepping up. And I think you and I met originally, several months ago, by chance in a parking lot at a car show, and really appreciated the opportunity to just kind of visit real briefly. And it was a very high energy, high, you know, it was an extremely fun exchange for me, because I love this topic, and I'm worried. I mean, I'm really worried when I see the young people, particularly in Europe. You know, I see people like Greta Thunberg, who is, if I'm not mistaken, correct me if I'm wrong, she's either the granddaughter or the great granddaughter of the guy you said wrote the paper in 1876, Cervante, what's his last name?
Arrhenius.
Arrhenius. I think she's his relative. And now here she is at the age of, I think she just turned 16. And literally, we're recording this broadcast on August 20th. And if I'm not mistaken, last year in August of 2018, this young lady woke up one day. She's autistic, or she has Asperger's. So she's on the autism spectrum. And so she's always been a little different. Now, you're listening here and you're going, where is she going? Well, I'm telling you what, I'm going to go someplace pretty cool, and I think you're going to like it. In the meantime, I really appreciate that you're here with us on KCIW. This little Curry Coast Community Radio based out of Brookings Harbor, Oregon, is the coolest little radio station in the world. Why? Because as I said earlier, we are the media, and this little radio station proves it. We get a chance to get out here and be the media right here in Brookings Harbor, Oregon. If you like what you're hearing, awesome. Maybe consider contributing to the station. And if you don't like what you're hearing, get your own radio show and get on here and talk about something that you find interesting and fascinating, or perhaps life-changing, like climate change. So the kids in Europe, Greta Thunberg comes to mind. You know, she tells her story that when she was 8 years old, she heard about climate change. And she says, literally, I got sick. She was eight. She says, I got sick and I stopped talking. She wouldn't talk. So she went mute, and she was thinking for a long time. She said she thought about it for a long time. And at age 15 then, and I think she started doing some things, you know, just at her house. She encouraged her parents to stop flying, which they literally stopped flying. Her mom is an international opera star, opera singer, well known. And the mom literally put her career totally on stop and said, I'm not going to fly anymore to performances. Her father stopped flying. The family went plant-based. They made a lot of decisions internally within their own household to make a difference. And then Greta, a few years later, right? So 8 years old, she decides, hey, I can't talk. She thinks about it for a while. She makes some changes within her family. And then she says, you know what? I'm going to start going on strike. And so every Friday, beginning about a year ago, right now in August of 2018, she started striking in front of the parliament in her town. I think she's in Stockholm. And she, one little girl, she's very petite, little tiny little thing, went out there with a little sign, a handmade black and white sign. And it said, school strike for climate. And it said it in a language I'm not even going to try to pretend to pronounce what it said. But one kid showed up. And now she has created an international movement. I'm getting goosebumps because this kid is now being considered, a year later, at age 16, they've nominated her for a Nobel Prize.
That's right.
The kid is amazing. And then on top of that, there's this whole movement of people in Europe called Extinction Rebellion, where people are saying, we are rebelling against this. And, you know, Greta even says things like, you know, you guys, you adults who could be, should be taking all the massive change to make the difference that could be made, right? Like there's a timeline, which I want to ask you about this timeline. So if there's this timeline out there that we have a carbon budget, and I want to ask you about carbon budget, I have so many questions. Like this could be a 5-hour show. And I know we only probably have, you know, another 39 minutes to talk.
This could be a 12-week show.
It should be an everyday, all day, 24-hour a day show. It should be. It really should be. So I want to ask about carbon budget, but little Greta's out there sparking these people worldwide. Again, we are the media, and she has taken Instagram and Facebook and YouTube, and she's using it to inform people and educate people and get people to rise up, like Extinction Rebellion, which you can find on all those platforms I just mentioned, Extinction Rebellion. Let's talk about a couple of things, Tom, and thank you so much for being patient while I had my rant. I really appreciate it. I kind of tend to rant. I know my listeners are like, oh God, here we go. It's another rant. Sorry. Not sorry. Sorry, not sorry. Isn't that what they say? Hashtag sorry, not sorry. I'm really not sorry. This is the most important issue of our entire time. What is a carbon budget? I'm interested to know about that. And what is this timeline we're hearing about? I'm interested to hear those two things.
Okay. A carbon budget is how much carbon is in a particular unit of space.
What is carbon? I mean, what is carbon?
Carbon is the element that you're made of, that biological systems are made of. But carbon dioxide is the stuff that you're breathing out into that microphone.
Okay.
We breathe in oxygen, which is a certain low, relatively efficient percentage of the atmosphere. And then we breathe out carbon dioxide.
Got it.
So that carbon dioxide is then taken up by plants. So plants take up the carbon dioxide. They convert it in the presence of sunlight and some water. They convert it into sugars or carbohydrates, which is the building blocks of life.
Yay, plants.
So we need plants.
Yes.
We need animals because we're some of them. And basically the carbon budget of an individual is how much carbon is there. The carbon dioxide budget or the carbon budget is basically truncated. It's basically talking about, in our case, the carbon dioxide budget.
Oh.
How much carbon dioxide is being emitted from all these fossil fuels that are being burned, coal, oil, and natural gas, into the atmosphere. So these are emissions. And each country has its own emissions. And all of those countries added together produce huge amounts of carbon dioxide. And it's billions of tons, 40 billion tons of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere every year. Now, it's a gas. It's invisible. You can't smell it. You can't taste it. You can't see it. But it's out there. And it builds up and builds up. So we are trying to slow that carbon dioxide emission rate and lower the carbon budget of the atmosphere of the Earth. Because the more carbon dioxide that's there, because it's a heat-trapping gas, the more heat that's being trapped by the atmosphere on the Earth. And that's why the Earth is warming up.
That was super helpful for you to say that dioxide had been truncated in the discussion. So it's really a carbon dioxide budget, but we can just say carbon budget with essentially saying the same thing. Is CO2 carbon dioxide?
CO2 is carbon dioxide. There's
Dang.
One carbon atom. There's two oxygen atoms, CO2. So that's what carbon dioxide is.
That helps me so much to know that. And I bet it helps our listeners too. Isn't it nice to have a scientist in the room to ask questions like this and to be able to get this information? Thank you, Tom. That's so, so helpful. So continue now about, and correct me if I'm wrong, did you say 4 billion or 40 billion tons
of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere every year? And
that's
worldwide, going up.
Worldwide, that's
up,
all countries, right?
Worldwide, all countries. All countries have to be participating in this process to lower the amount of carbon dioxide they're producing.
And I think that's been the message that's been said for decades now, right? And everybody's been like, oh yeah, we got to limit our carbon dioxide. Hey, we got to do something. But now it's like the house is on fire, right? I mean, if I'm understanding this correctly.
This is the most existential problem that we have as a human species. And if we don't control it, we're not controlling it right now. If we don't control it, our civilization will be unrecognizable, literally.
Gosh.
And
oh
we don't have much time. I mean, back in 2015, President Obama was the leader to bring 194 countries to the table.
Mm-hmm.
And he did that with the cooperation of all of the other presidents and prime ministers. And all of them were concerned. They all are concerned. And they were able to develop the Paris Agreement, or what's called the Paris Accord, in 2015. They all agreed to continue this process of trying to have a global agreement how to reduce those. In 2016, the very next year, they all ratified the Paris Accord, except for two countries, which was Syria and Nicaragua, for different reasons. One was war. Nicaragua didn't think that we were doing enough. But since then, the next year, they are on board as well. Subsequent to that, as soon as we became 2016, unfortunately, President Trump has now decided that he is pulling out of the Paris Accord. We are the only country in the world that has pulled out of the climate accord, or we are in the process of pulling out of the climate accord. And unfortunately, the United States, with its power and its abilities worldwide, we should continue to be the leaders as we were before to move this forward. But luckily, even though the Trump administration is pulling out, there are still over 6,000 companies and 7,000 cities in 133 countries that are implementing greenhouse gas emissions reduction protocols and following the Paris Accord, even though we as an administration are not.
Oh my goodness, it's just crazy to understand the history here. And did you say in 1994 the Paris Accord came, or was that later than that? 2000?
Paris Accord was 2015.
2015.
And the next year they ratified it, so all countries agreed.
Okay.
But even the Paris Accord and these restrictions that for emissions that set are not enough to bring us out of this crisis.
Exactly. That's the part that's so scary, is like every single day, you know, aircraft are taking off. I mean, there's an app, if you're listening in, go pick up an app called Flight Radar. I think it's called Flight Radar 24, Flight Radar 24. Just for the heck of it. I mean, it's free. You can just pick it up and look at it. It will blow your mind how many aircraft are in the air at all times. And then if you're into it, pick up an app called Marine Traffic. It's also free. There's a paid version of it too. But this is just commercial stuff, right? So you'll see all the commercial aircraft, and the flights are unbelievably complex and massive numbers of them. And then you'll see all the ships, the container ships, the chemical ships, the car transporters, all of these things that are burning up fossil fuels all day, every day. And then, if you're in Brookings Harbor, Oregon, go down to the port. Might I recommend that you walk there, or perhaps ride your bike there, and watch how many people are sitting there in their cars, with their cars running, eating their Dairy Queen, watching the ocean. I mean, I'm down with watching the ocean, but really, you don't need your car running while you're sitting there. And, you know, don't even get me started on eating, you know, all that other stuff. I'm not going to talk about that. Not right now. Some other time, perhaps. Probably in this broadcast, but not right this moment. I can't believe that our country, one of the most highly visible and potentially over the course of time, long respected and long reviled by others, pulled out of that agreement, or is in the process of pulling out of that agreement. Now, what occurs to me, a couple of things. There's a term that's flying around these days called climate justice. And if I understand it correctly, and I'm hoping you have a sense of what it is, if I understand climate justice correctly, the idea is that all the wealthier nations that have already created all the wonderful things that we have, flights and trains and buses and stations and buildings and houses and couches and hoses and plastics and name it. I mean, look around the room that you're sitting in right now. Everything that is there is either grown or mined, right? So it's either grown or mined and somehow manufactured to put into you. There's a lot of energy inputs to create what's around you. All that energy input took some sort of carbon dioxide. Thank you for helping me understand that. But then there are those.
It didn't take carbon dioxide. It produced carbon dioxide in the process.
Yes,
that's why we are where we are right now.
Right. And so all these countries that are in this process now of just sort of starting to come up, they're getting their comeuppance. They're wanting to increase the quality of life for their people. They're the ones that are suffering the most. If I kind of get a picture, I want to have a picture in my mind. I'm like, I have my hands in front of me in a little circle. Okay. To my listeners, a little circle in my hands. I'm representing the globe on my hands. And if I understand correctly, the places where the climate change is the worst right now, where it's causing the most mayhem on the planet, is the places where the people have the least amount of input to the carbon dioxide production, right? So they've done the least amount of damage to the earth, and they're taking the biggest brunt of the change to the earth. A, is that correct? And
yes.
B, talk about climate justice.
Yes, because they don't have the means by which they can have a better life and air conditioning and all of those things for producing food. We do, and we exploit all of those things. So our lifestyle is very rich. Our lifestyle is very comfortable. Theirs is not. We have produced this problem. All of the richer countries of the world have caused this excess carbon dioxide to a much greater degree, whereas those third world countries and second world countries have not as much. So right now, the United States, in comparison with other countries, are only producing, in terms of carbon dioxide emissions, what we say carbon emissions, we are producing about 15% of the global emissions, carbon dioxide emissions, to the atmosphere. Compared with other countries, we are not the most. Up until about 2005, we were the greatest producers of carbon dioxide. China passed us out in 2005. And they are increasing much more so even now. They're still increasing. Even though there are movements and processes in place to lower emissions, China is producing more carbon dioxide because they're buying our coal and producing that to increase their economy. So they haven't slowed down. In fact, they've increased carbon emissions. So even though the United States and China and the European Union and India, all of the high carbon producing countries, have caused the greatest percentage of this problem, right now we're only about 15%. That doesn't mean that we should only deal with 15%. We need to work with all of the other countries to really bring down the carbon emissions. But bringing down carbon emissions, even as you're saying, let's not fly anymore, let's do all those things, and that's the fear that the oil companies actually are producing. You know, they're going to stop you from flying. They're going to stop you from having hamburgers anymore. No, we all need to work together for this process. And that's not the bottom line, though. Even though we are reducing carbon dioxide emissions in the United States and many other places, that carbon dioxide that we're producing today will be in the atmosphere for 500 to 2,000 years. Mm. So every day is more and more, and it sends us out into the future in terms of being able to solve this problem. In addition to reducing the carbon emissions from everything that we do, we also need to start doing what's called direct air capture. We need to start taking the carbon dioxide that's in the air right now, pulling it out of the air to reduce that carbon dioxide. Right now, the concentration of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere is about 415 parts per million. It means nothing except that we started at about 280 before this process began, and we have added about 68% more carbon dioxide since the Industrial Revolution started.
Are you saying we could actually take it out of the air? Like,
yes.
There's a way to remove it. Well, how do you do that?
There's both solid and there's liquid amines and other chemicals that can, when air is passed over them, they take out the carbon dioxide. The Germans started this, developing these chemicals in their submarines. So when they had submarines, they can take the breath of all of the guys in the submarine, remove the carbon dioxide, and they still have oxygen.
Well, I have never heard
way back
this.
In World War II, this was developed very, very efficiently.
Wow.
So some of those same chemicals are being used today in prototype carbon dioxide direct air capture machines. And there's probably about 7 to 10 prototypes that are being tested now around the globe. And they are very expensive because it takes a lot of energy to use them and to run them. But as we develop alternative energy sources like wind power, like
yes.
solar power, like
geothermal and biomass and whatever else.
And hydroelectric.
Yes.
All of those can contribute to running these very high energy machines that can pull carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere. So we need to do both carbon emission reduction as well as direct air capture to get the carbon dioxide out of the air. That's the only way we will solve this problem.
That is the first thing I have ever heard in the whole concept of climate change, that there might be a glimmer, a sliver of hope that we could actually actively do something at a very large level to take care of the carbon dioxide that's in the air. And when you talked about amines, isn't that protein? Isn't amines A-M-I-N-E-S. Isn't that a kind of a protein?
Like a protein.
Like a protein. Yeah. Wow. That's awesome. That makes me feel so good. So, but that's at a big scale. And like you said, there's a, so now of course the, you know, the capitalist entrepreneur in me says, well, you know, is somebody building that? Because there's obviously going to be a whole lot of money in that. I mean, you would think maybe the big companies like Exxon and Texaco and Chevron and others that have been super bigly involved, bigly, that's a word, by the way, in creating this mess might be partially interested in trying to capture
the outside. I'm sure their researchers are actively working on this. They don't want to lose their marketplace advantage.
Right.
So, in addition to lowering emissions, as well as the direct air capture, there's so many other things that are already happening that we have to think about the positive aspects of this. I mean, we have all of the, I mean, you own a Tesla, which is an electric car.
Right.
We need to electrify our transportation system tremendously.
Yep.
We need to get off of gasoline, off of oil, and off of natural gas. And we need to electrify our homes. We need to use photovoltaic solar. We need to use wind. We need to use all of the tools in our toolbox to eliminate the production of carbon dioxide. And that needs to happen 20 years ago.
Right, exactly.
Unfortunately.
We're so late to the dance.
It's crazy. We are. And every year that we go on into the future, the problem gets worse. If we started in 1988 when James Hansen testified in Congress, we would have only had to reduce our emissions by like 2% per year. And we would have had it easily. Mm-hmm. That would have been very easy to do. Now, every year is getting worse and worse to get down to the level that we need to. We're looking at reducing 10 to 12% per year in order to solve that problem.
And people have their heads in the sand. They're just not doing it. People are like, oh, well, someone's going to do it. Guys, you're someone. You listening right now, you are someone. You have to take some action. You personally. Yeah, I'm getting a little irritated and agitated here because all of us have to do something. Someone has to do something. And someone is you. And it's me. And it's my husband and my grandchildren and my children and my friends. And every one of us has to do something. Now, I'm really curious. Tom, you've got a lot of ideas. Not just ideas. You've got solid strategies. Things that people can do. And I want to hear about that list. I want to know. I also know that coming up in a couple of months, if you're here in the Brookings Harbor area and you are realizing the severity of the crisis in front of us, guys, when I tell you the house is on fire, it's not like, oh, the house is on fire, let's move to another room. It's like, dude, the house is on freaking fire. We have to take some action and we have to take it now. Okay, so if you're in the Brookings Harbor area and you'd like to know more about this, in detail, and to meet Tom Sukhanek and learn what you can do personally, more than what we're going to talk about right now, talk about what you're going to share and where. How can people meet you in person and learn more about this issue in October, if I'm not mistaken?
October 23rd, a Wednesday evening in the community library in Brookings. I will be giving a one-hour climate change presentation, and hopefully people will understand and recognize what they can do personally to help solve this problem. I'm going to go over just a few. I have a long, long list of individual things that you, on the air, can do. So in terms of energy production and consumption, I'm just going to quickly go through a few of these things.
Tom, before you start, can people find this list somewhere? It's on your website?
It is.
What's that web address?
That web address is tomsukhanek.net. That's Tom, and then my last name, Sukhanek.net. Right on the homepage, there's a link to a list of things that you can do personally that will improve and help solve this climate problem.
And you have to. You have to. All of us have to. We all have to make a difference. You're listening in on KCIW, the Ocean Mist Power Hour, broadcasting out of Brookings Harbor, Oregon, and we're visiting with Tom Sukhanek, world-renowned, highly regarded scholar, scientist. He's talking about climate change, which I'm telling you is the single most pressing issue in your life. You got issues? I bet you do. I do too. You have nothing more important than this. Your house is on fire. You got to make a change. You got to make a difference. Tom, tell us what each of us individually can do starting right now, today, like the second you hear this broadcast. What can I do more and better to help this problem.
Do we have another hour?
Yes, we take as long as we want to, but really we probably do only have another 15 or 18 minutes.
So in terms of energy and product consumption, use energy efficient like Energy Star products. Turn off unused lights. Transition to LED bulbs. Keep the thermostats as low as possible in the winter and as high as possible in the summer. Reduce, reuse, repurpose, recycle everything, especially plastics, which come from oil. Mm. Eliminate single-use items. Use your own reusable grocery bags. You think that's like nothing, but
it's a big deal.
Grocery Outlet and even Fred Meyer, all of them use plastic bag after plastic bag after plastic bag. Fred Meyer is eliminating plastic bags.
I love it. I heard that. I love it. Thank you, Fred Meyer, for doing that.
Use less fossil fuel-based products. Eliminate vampire power, which is your utensils and your other things in your kitchen.
Like your appliances and stuff just
always being plugged in. If they're just plugged in, they will suck energy.
Wow.
Wash your clothes in cooler, cold water. Opt for paperless billing. Unsubscribe or cancel all junk mail. Do a home energy audit, and you'll find out how you can use less energy in general.
Do you think Coos Curry Electric offers those home energy audits? Do you think you could get one of those from? I bet you could. I'm going to look up on their website while we're visiting and see if they offer those.
I don't know if they do. My son could help you out because he's an environmental engineer and he does energy audits.
Nice.
But anyway, plant more trees. Trees are the most efficient sucker upper of carbon dioxide we have. The more trees you plant, the better it's going to be. Conserve all water. Don't overwater your lawns. Blah, 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 blah. And I've got pages and pages of things that you can do. But if you look on my website, you'll see all of these. You could carpool. You could ride share. You could take public transportation. You could buy a Tesla. Or if you don't want to buy a Tesla, you can buy any electric or hybrid vehicle. Along that line, the military is already on this. They've been on this for decades. The military knows what the projections are. They're not afraid to do what's necessary. Mm-hmm. They have tanks and trucks that are all hybrids now. They have battleships that are hybrid.
Wow.
People don't understand this, but the military is on it. And they're trying to reduce their fuel usage because fuel is the biggest consumer of the military's spending, as well as loss of life, because they have these long caravans of fuel trucks that have to support them all the time. If they are now trying to go solar in as many places as possible. And the last piece that you need to undertake as a human being and as a representative of trying to solve this problem is your personal responsibility. What that means is you need to get out and vote. That's the most important thing
yes.
that you can do.
Yes.
Vote in all your local elections, your state elections, your national elections, and you need to vote for those individuals, those candidates that are going to represent you to solve this problem. You know who they are, you know who they're not. And that is the bottom line for all of this. We need the federal government, and we need the federal government to support the programs that are going to make this happen through either a cap and trade program or a carbon pricing program. There are now 7 carbon pricing bills on the Senate and House floor that are up for a vote. So we need to support those candidates that are going to vote for these things that are going to help us solve this problem.
You know, and some of those things sound like, oh, they're just little foo-foo cosmetic things that we can do, like, oh, turn off the lights. Well, talk a little bit about why does that work? What is it about turning off the lights and unplugging your electric appliances at home? Because that's something every single person in here could do today, right now. Like, you could get off of this broadcast when you're done and go around your house and pop, 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 unplug a bunch of stuff. Why does that make a difference?
Because cumulatively, if more and more and more people do that, we are going to be lowering our carbon emissions because that electricity comes from somewhere.
Right.
And in our case, it comes from power plants locally or off the grid. And we need to lower the usage of electricity and not electricity in general, but we need to lower the electricity that's produced from coal, oil, and gas. And that is going to solve our problem.
That's going to help for sure. Now, when you talk about voting, and I have a really long history in politics, I've really never talked about that history, but the brief version is I worked for a U.S. senator for a long, long time, both in his campaign, then in his state headquarters office. And then in his campaign again, I managed his campaign. And then I was a deputy press secretary to the governor and a full press secretary to our attorney general in Nevada. So I've got this long background in politics. And the reason I share that with you is because I've actually gone out on precinct walking. I've done get out the vote phone calling. I've done fundraising to support candidates that I believed in over the years. All the folks I've ever worked for were highly liberal Democrat politicians. And they always were, in my opinion, doing the right thing and doing the best thing that they could. You know, it's really weird because my whole time in politics is late 80s through the 90s and a little beyond the 90s. And I think climate change was never really an issue any of us ever talked about, which is weird because we all know that that was an issue at the time, but we weren't talking about it. The reason I told you all that is because this, you may not realize how powerful one vote can be, and you might not know the right question to ask. And so, Tom, you made the comment, you know some of the people to vote for and not vote for. I mean, President Trump may have some good things going for him. Don't know. But one thing that's a major strike against him, in my opinion, is he's not really considerate about the house being on fire. And I'm talking about the house, the globe, the planet, our home, the earth. It's on fire. And maybe that will or will not sway your vote. What question, Tom, or questions, maybe you could give us two or three questions that people could ask at the local, the regional, the state, or the national level if they had the opportunity to ask a politician. Is it as simple as, what is your stance on climate change? Or is it more direct, like, what do you personally do for climate change? What action, you know, what are the, what's the right question to ask?
Well, from a political question, from a political perspective,
yeah.
I think a good question would be addressing these bills that are in the Senate and the House,
right,
in terms of their representatives. Are you going to support the climate change bill that is going to help reduce carbon dioxide emissions? And that is a big question. Now, my wife and I belong to a local community group, what's called a huddle, which is a politically motivated group that is trying to help candidates doing the right thing. We send letters, we do postcards, we email, we text, and we send money to those candidates who are actually doing something positive. And I would encourage everyone to join or develop a community group that can help support candidates who are doing the right thing. When you send in a postcard or a letter or a phone call, the congressional representatives typically have the equation that one piece of information, one person giving information represents 100 other people out there. So it adds up really fast, and they take notice. Every single letter, every single phone call, every single text that they get, they add them up. And the more pressure they get, the more it's going to help solve this problem.
That is 100% true, and I know that from personal experience. Literally answering the telephone in Senator Dick Bryan's office, you know, any one of us would pick up that phone and say, good afternoon, Senator Bryan's office. And the person on the other end of the phone would say, you know, I want to let the senator know that I don't like the farm bill and this and that and the other thing in the farm bill. And I want to make sure that he votes no on that farm bill, whatever the issue was. You know, it could be farm bill, could be climate change, could be, you know, a Supreme Court nominee or something to that effect. We tallied every single call. Email wasn't big then, which is very strange, but we got faxes, we got letters in the mail, and we took phone calls. And the senator got every single day, a U.S. senator, and he's just one. There's 100 of them. You know, they all get this little briefing report. It's an executive summary. It comes in every day. Your constituents said X, Y, and Z. You got X number of phone calls, X number of emails, faxes, letters in the mail, that kind of thing. And it was the early days of algorithms. You know, now I'm sure it's far more automated. And the fact is, they are listening. Tom just said they're listening. They are listening, and they need to hear from you. So in addition to everything else you've heard, whether it's unplugging appliances or using your car less or riding your bike or turning off your engine when the car is sitting still or any number of things, planting trees, watering less, turning the thermostat up or down dependent. You know, you can wear a sweater. It doesn't have to be 75 degrees in your house. I know you're old. Put a sweater on. I know you're young. Put a sweater on. Doesn't matter. Whatever you have to do to help this problem. Guys, I couldn't be more adamant about this problem being the single most pressing problem ever in human history. Ever. It's not inflammatory. I mean, it sounds like, oh, she's making a big deal out of nothing. It's not nothing. This is the biggest issue to face humanity ever, ever. And we're at that moment right now in humanity where we could either make or break it. The train is climbing the hill right now, and it's climbing the hill at a really rapid clip. And once it gets to the top of the hill, if we let it get to the top of the hill and we let it crest the hill, it will go so fast we will not be able to turn it around. Now, Tom, before I say this last thing, I want to say you can also pick up the phone today and talk about what is my senator or my congressman doing on this bill. You can send an email. It's super easy to do it. You can request an energy audit. Now, look, I could not find on the Coos Curry Electric Cooperative Incorporated website whether or not they do energy audits. So call them. Their phone number is 866-352-9044. 866-352-9044. That's their after hours number. Call them. Ask if they do energy audits. If they say they don't, ask them to come and do one. Figure it out. Get an energy audit. Get your home looked at. Oh God, Tom, we could talk for ever. We could just not ever stop talking about this. We could make this a marathon. In fact, maybe we should do some kind of a radiothon or something and raise money for climate change. I don't know. Let's just spur some ideas. But I want to talk about the timeline, because I've heard from, you know, a lot of the folks that are out there working on this issue day to day that there's a timeline. You know, we've got this carbon dioxide budget, and there's a timeline. I've heard it's as long as 12 years, which, you know, oh, 12 years. We've got plenty of time, right? We don't have time, guys. If you're listening on KCIW, the Ocean Mist Power Hour, 100.7 FM on your radio dial, bam, the time is now, right now. What is the timeline, Tom?
Well, most scientists have been projecting of what's going to happen by the year 2100, but that's from a scientific perspective. What's going to solve our problem is going to happen within the next 10 years. We need to be fixing this, not just starting to fix it. We need to be fixing this problem by 2030, if at all possible. We need to throw all of our resources forward into every possible tool in the toolbox that we have: lowering emissions, direct air capture, passing legislation, working at the home level, every single individual person level. And we need, unfortunately, we need to do that for all the countries in the world, as many as we can, but especially those rich countries that are using and producing the most amount of carbon dioxide out there. And this is for our children and our grandchildren.
Yep.
We're going to be long gone by the time all of these extreme events take over the earth in this existential emergency crisis situation. But we are going to be facing, as you can see now over the last 6 months, think of every day, every night, every morning, all of these extreme events are happening. And it's gotten worse in the last 6 months to 9 months. So I'm just going to finish my little piece here by saying an old Native American proverb: we do not inherit the earth from our ancestors. We borrow it from our children.
Yes, exactly. I am so thankful for all of this information. When you say, you know, we really need to be fixing it, and we need to be fixing it right now, guys, right now, 10 years, that's 3,650 days. That's not a long time. I just celebrated my 40th wedding anniversary. I know. I don't know how that happened, but that's a tiny little piece of time. When I think about 40 years of marriage, you know, I've seen a lot come and go since 1979, and the last 10 years just ripped by. This morning, my phone served up a picture to me. I don't know if you have an iPhone, but mine served up an image to me of Thanksgiving 2009. And I sent the picture. It was of both of my daughters, and I sent it to both of them. And I said, wow, you know, here's life before children. They both look like super good. They don't have any black circles under their eyes. They both look great. They still look great. They look great now. But, you know, life before children's a lot different than life after children. And you know what, guys? Life before climate change was a lot different than life after climate change. And I appreciate the Native American saying you shared with me. And I saw, when I kind of went on my little rant earlier about the possibility of getting a sense of depression from participating so much in social media, it's because it's so overwhelming to me that I might be alive to see the final stages of our earth. And when you talk about the Native American idea that, you know, we're borrowing this earth from our children, I saw a sign in social media. There's a lot of folks out there demonstrating. Europe has really taken this issue on. And here in America, we're just, God, we're just so ugly American, and I'm part of it. And it pisses me off to be part of that ugly American thing that we talked about in the 70s. And here we are, we're still doing it. We're still being it. You know, they're putting signs out that say, our parents are going to die of old age and we're going to die of climate change. You know, that's kids. I saw a little kid carrying a sign that said, my parents or my grandparents are going to die of old age and I'm going to die of climate change. And people are already dying of climate change. Tom, what do you say to that?
We are. But the bottom line is we have the tools to fix this problem.
Right now.
Right
if
now.
If we're acting right now.
We have to participate in the process. We have to get our feet wet. We have to get in there and help do all the personal things that we can do. And we have to support legislation. We have to support the candidates that are going to support these measures that will help solve the problem. We have the tools. We have to be optimistic. We have to get in there and fight for it.
We have to want it.
We do.
We do. We have to want it. And, you know, it's interesting. Before we got started, I know the last couple of days we've been talking, kind of getting ready to get in here into the studio. And I loved you asked me, you know, kind of talk about the format of this with me. And I said, well, you know, the Ocean Mist Power Hour, we don't do crisis, controversy, or conflict. That's not what we do here. And then last night in the middle of the night, I woke up and I was thinking, you know, there's no crisis, controversy, or conflict at all in climate change, right? No, because it is crisis, conflict, and controversy. That's all climate change is. It's the single biggest thing, issue, problem, concern that we have. And it's not just, you know, Americans versus Chinese or, you know, the Nicaraguans saying you're not doing enough or the Syrians not signing the Paris Climate Agreement. It's all of us. Now, look, if you want to geek out on science, geek out on science. Go look up IPCC. Tom, when did the most current IPCC, do you know what that stands for and when did it come out?
Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change.
Okay.
So and UN program.
UN program.
That assesses what the problems, what the existing problems are with climate change and how to address them.
And we know that the most current issue of that came out in June. Is that right? The latest IPCC report?
No. The major IPCC reports are coming out about 2022, but there have been dozens and dozens of United Nations and smaller reports coming out all the time.
Awesome. So don't get locked into this idea that, you know, oh, climate change is a hoax. Really? So all the world's scientists are pulling a hoax on us? No. If there's an alternative report out there, someone bring it out because it ain't happening. All the reports, all the scientists, all the countries, except ours evidently, are united in the Paris Accord, are united in the fight to protect people, the planet, the plants, the animals, this life that we live. Wow, Tom, thank you for coming on to the Ocean Mist Power Hour and talking about this. I'm hopeful that you'd be willing to come back maybe on a fairly regular basis and give us updates.
I will, but October 23rd is the date when hopefully I can address much more in detail what's happening and what we can do about it.
Awesome. Well, thanks again for joining us on the Ocean Mist Power Hour, broadcasting out of Brookings Harbor, Oregon. Thank you to the entire KCIW sound engineering and production crew. This is Misty Young with the Ocean Mist Power Hour on KCIW. We'll see you again soon. Thanks again.
The opinions expressed here are those of the individual participants. Curry Coast Community Radio takes no position on issues discussed in this program.